Welcome to Data Science Perspectives. This series focuses on analytics and data science professionals from across industry to learn about how their career unfolded, what skills they look for when hiring, and what trends they think are coming next. I'm your host, Bill Franks. Let's get to it. Welcome to this episode of Data Science Perspectives. I'm your host, Bill Franks. Today, we're going to be joined by David Somers, the Senior Vice President of Analytics at Epsilon. I initially met David when he moved to Atlanta for a role with Cox Automotive not quite 10 years ago. We hit it off the first time we met, and we've stayed in touch ever since. I think you're going to find as we talk, he's a very genuine person and a sincerely nice guy. David's currently, as I said, the SVP of Analytics at Epsilon, which is a company that's been providing customer data and related analytics services for several decades. Immediately prior to that, he was Vice President of Analytics for the Cox Enterprises Automotive Division. And he came to Cox following a role as Head of Enterprise Analytics and Insight for Advanced Auto Parts. Before that, he was Senior Vice President of Customer Insights and Analytics for Nationwide Insurance. And he also had roles at Bank of America, Best Buy, and Wells Fargo. Quite a list of companies, you got to admit. He has a PhD in sociology with a concentration in statistics and research methodology from Ohio State University. And with that, let's welcome David to the show. Thanks for joining me on the show today, David.
Hi, Bill. Good to see you.
So the question I always start everyone with is just a quick overview on what initially drew you into the world of data and analytics, you know, back when you started working, when it wasn't yet a thing that attracted people by default.
Well, you know, like most great analytics professionals, I started out as a pre-dental student. And, I was happy studying biology for a couple of years. And ironically, they had a mentorship program. So between semesters, I worked with a couple of dentists and they kind of talked me out of being a dentist. So it's kind of a funny story. They loved being dentists. They felt, well prepared from dental school to be a dentist. But they said, boy, I didn't realize how hard it was to run my own small business. And they kind of talked me out of it. So maybe they just didn't want competition. But my dreams of being a dentist kind of stopped there. And I'd been taking an economics class. And I thought it was pretty cool how they used to be able to predict things. I didn't know how it worked, but I liked what they did. And so then after that, I took a stats class and learned a little bit about probability, a little bit about regression. And from then on, I was hooked. I thought that's what I wanted to do. And I took quite a few economics classes. And I liked how they asked questions about people and groups of people and how they're different or similar. And so I really kind of grew up in the social sciences, a lot of economics, a lot of sociology, and some public health as well. So kind of got into it, not on purpose, but really kind of enjoyed it once I was able to dig in a little bit.
I don't think I knew that dental fact about you. I can say, knowing you and your temperament, I think you might have been a good dentist in the sense of you would have had a very comforting, even though I'm about to cause you immense pain in your mouth, all will be well about
well,
you.
Well, I will say on a couple of bad days at work, I do kind of daydream and wonder, if I should have been a dentist. But overall, I'm pretty happy with the decision. So,
well, so you got turned on to the space then through that experience you just mentioned. And then early in your career for the first couple of decades, you were mainly in the finance and insurance space. You had one stint in the middle with Best Buy, but largely finance and insurance. So what drew you into that finance and insurance space specifically and then kept you there for the most part for the first few decades?
Yeah, the first job out of school was with an insurance company, and frankly, they picked me. It was an opportunity for my first job. So I was working as a statistician for hire at a demography center, and someone there, had a spouse who was at this insurance company, and I still had about a year of school left. And so I just met with her for lunch and I said, hey, in about a year, I'll be done and would love to network with you and help explore how to get a job somewhere. And then like a month later, she called me and said, hey, I loved our lunch. We have an opening. Do you want to start? So they picked me, and it was a great first job. I I knew how to do modeling. I was mostly a data scientist coming out of school, even though we didn't call it that. I was mostly writing programs, you know, different types of algorithms. And it was just a great way to go from, you know, the stats lab in school to, oh my goodness, how do you bring this to life? How do you develop a campaign? It was mostly for marketing analytics. How do you measure performance? How do you optimize? So it really, it was a great first environment to put into practice everything I had learned in school. And then was able to go into a position at Best Buy, which was a lot of fun. And the irony is that the Best Buy position really opened up a door for banking, because the person who recruited me there said, look, banks are notorious for not having a very good customer experience, right? We're seen as making decisions for the financial part of it and not the customer part of it. And, you know, I was able to do some fun customer-centered work at Best Buy, where, you know, we were doing segmentation and some loyalty work that got her attention. And so, you know, was brought over to Bank of America to really start helping to put more of a customer-centric approach behind the analytics and some of the marketing that we were doing. So it's funny how all of those things fit together. And, you know, when you're sitting there at Best Buy, you don't think about, you know, oh, that's a natural, you know, entree into banking, but that's the way it works. So it was a lot of fun at both places, and you know, the work had more similarities than differences.
So in the time that you were largely focused on that financial services and insurance area, what were some of the major changes you witnessed in terms of the types of analytics that were being done and also the way that they were being executed?
Yeah, you know, I think one of the most fun things we did is we were doing the media mix modeling work in banking. And, you know, so we were able to look at not only the effects of each channel, but the halo effects. And online banking was just starting to get big. And it was really helpful for the company to see the paths that customers were taking, because at first we thought, oh, you're going to, you know, invest in online banking to help online banking and invest in channels to help other channels. And in fact, the offline channels were the biggest helping hand to the online channels. So it was really helpful for the company to see that a lot of those online relationships started in a banking center. And I think some of the analytics that we were doing really helped to kind of show that customer journey and you know, some of the different points of contact that were really important for getting people more comfortable to do things with their money online. So that was exciting. And I think in a very strange way, you know, being at a bank during the financial crisis was a really good education for me and a lot of the folks on the analytics team, because some of the things that we'd all taken for granted, like the strength of your brand and, you know, just naturally going deeper with your customers in terms of loyalty, all of that went out the window. And so we had to go back to basics, and you really felt the importance of using the analytics to help make some pretty tough decisions. And, you know, we had to think creatively, right? The banks were getting beat up in the news every day, and we didn't have much news data. So we went out, we purchased data on the news, and we were able to figure out, you know, what is the risk of those headlines, right? Does it really matter? Or does it go in one ear and out the other? And so we quickly, you know, did quite a bit of predictive analytics. We found which types of stories mattered the most to customers. And, you know, we were able to factor those types of things into the decision. So wouldn't wish that time, you know, again for anything, but it did raise the importance of what we did, because it was critical to, you know, surviving and, you know, giving customers what they really needed.
Well, I can tell you today that news analysis, as you described it, would sound somewhat blasé and standard, but back when you were doing that, knowing the time frame of that, that was pretty cutting edge stuff. I mean, that was some new ground you were treading at that point, right?
Yeah, and like I said, we had to go find the data and then make sense of it, because there's so much noise, And but certain types of topics were hot buttons with consumers, and knowing those types of things, you know, helped us figure out how to dig out and, you know, where to go deeper. Because, you know, the interesting thing is, you know, the strategy changed too, right? It went from an acquisition strategy of getting more customers to really trying to grow the relationships that we had, because at that time, you know, that was where the growth was going to be. So strategically, the company shifted, and so analytics had to certainly keep pace.
Yeah, so you ended up then making a transition first to Advance Auto Parts and then Cox Automotive, obviously more in the retail and automotive space. So what motivated you to make that switch? And then what did you find was different in those environments compared to what you were used to in that finance world?
Yeah, Advance Auto was fun because it was a lot of get the band back together. It was a lot of former Best Buy people, and, you know, we wanted to recreate some things that were pretty successful there. And so, you know, it's kind of funny. I have really good memories of the time at Best Buy, but in the moment, you don't really think about what you're learning as much as, you know, when you're looking back a few years later. So there were some amazing people. And so I jumped at the opportunity to work with them again. And, you know, it was fun to recreate some of that. Very different product, but still a retail focus, which was good. And then, you know, Cox as well. That was a good experience. And, you know, a lot of that work was, frankly, just as much personal. Moving to Atlanta was important for some personal reasons. And it allows us to see family more than we could back in North Carolina. And so I think that's important too. It's always trying to balance, you know, what's good for the career, what's good for the family, and hopefully those things match up pretty well.
Well, of course, the last couple of years, you made a move then over to Epsilon, where you are, you know, you serve today. And that for the first time puts you on the vendor side, the provider side, as opposed to the client side. So what's that been like in terms of, you know, differences about what you see in the kinds of requests you're handling, but also just in terms of the job environment and how it's changed how you view analytics?
Yeah, you know, when I first started on that side, I was a little bit worried about would I miss out on some of the broader strategic things that I was used to doing, right? I was typically part of an analytics strategy for an entire company. And then all of a sudden, you know, on the vendor partner side, you might just be given a part of that. So it's harder to see the big picture. But I've been pleasantly surprised, right? The types of client relationships we have, they let us in. And, you know, they're longstanding, deep relationships. So it doesn't feel like a transaction of, you know, pay me this money and I'll build you that model. That's not the kind of culture we have, and it's not the kind of partners we have. So that part's been great. I think it has forced me to think about some things differently. You really have to be very clear about, you know, what's your competitive advantage, right? How do you, you know, bring that value to the client? Because everyone's telling them, you know, we have the best data, we have the best data scientists, we have the best process. And so you really have to identify, you know, what is it that you stand for, and to have that confidence and the credibility to really break through. So I've enjoyed that part of it. I think that does force you to stay sharp. And, you know, that's been good. I think, you know, the other thing is the variety. I get the opportunity to work with some amazing clients, and, you know, it ranges in industry. It's all over the place. And so I think that's a fun way to stay on your toes in a good way. And, you know, you get a variety of business questions, you get a variety of data, and, you know, it's fun to see different cultures in action.
Well, I know a lot of your time has been spent on, you know, customer or consumer related analytics. And of course, customer relationship management has been, you know, huge for many years now. But having, you know, been involved in it in the early days of CRM and through today, what have you seen some of the biggest advances and positives in how CRM has changed since the early days back at the turn of the century?
Yeah, for me, the biggest change has been how we can use digital channels to reach people, right? It was much more common in the earlier days to use direct mail and email in particular. And, you know, now with search and social and all different, you know, devices, it's a much more complicated world. So I'd say the digital piece is something that our clients are very interested in. And more importantly, you know, that's where customers are, consumers are. I think the biggest way that also plays out is in terms of multi-touch attribution. I think the models that allow us to really be more precise about which channels get the credit for, you know, the conversion has come a long way. And I love how, even though that's a, you know, programming thing on the back, you know, on the front end, it's very easy to see the customer journey. You know, what types of experiences are they having? What types of communications do they receive? And really understanding the sequence and how that matters. So it allows you to be more customer centered too. It's not just, you know, how much credit does this channel get versus that channel. I think it's a great capability, and it's come such a long way than our early conversations about, well, is it the first touch or the last touch? And we all knew that was pretty awful, but we didn't have a better idea. And now there's a lot of better ideas.
Yeah, that's excellent. So you've already described a, you know, pretty broad range of experiences that you've had. Obviously, you've had to be somewhat adaptable as you've navigated these, you know, various industries and career moves. So which of your traits, one or two of them, do you think have most enabled you to, you know, be successful in your career thus far?
Yeah, I think the biggest one is I try to be creative, and that's something that I look for, you know, as I'm talking with other people who are part of our team or might be joining our team. And I think too often people think about analytics folks or what we do for a living as not being a real creative process. And that drives me crazy. I, you know, whether you're building a model or coming up with a measurement plan, I think there's a lot of opportunity for creativity and just how we solve problems. And I think a lot of folks who I've talked with who don't know much about analytics thinks it's, oh, it's just a math problem. There's an equation and there's an answer and it's pretty straightforward. But yeah, I think that's just not the way I've seen it. I think there's a lot of opportunity to tackle tough problems in creative ways. I think, you know, the data is never perfect. The methodology is never perfect. So we have to make do with some tough decisions. And I like that part of it. To me, that's fun. And, you know, it's something that's kept me going. I think the other thing I try to do is try to stay in front of where the business is having questions, right? Trying to make sure that we're not just waiting for the next request to do some analytics, that we're actually keeping pace with where our consumers, you know, where's our business strategy going, and how do we make sure that we anticipate that in a way that we can help answer those questions very quickly. And that's going back to the news story. That's exactly what happened in banking. You could tell that's where so many of the business questions were headed, right? Should you invest in advertising during the middle of a headline risk storm, right? We collected the data and could start answering those questions knowing that they were coming. It wasn't a reaction to a question that we got. So, you know, I think staying in front of things and always trying to be creative are two things that have been fun and helpful.
So obviously, you know, having an educational background to support work is always important, but then there's a lot of things that you only come to know by actually being on the job and working in various organizations and so forth. So if you look back, what's one thing that you wish someone had told you before you started working that you wish you had known that you ended up having to learn the hard way?
Yeah, I'd say the technical skills only get you so far, right? Most of the classes that I took in grad school were focused on statistical techniques and how do you build a better model. And that's important depending on what your role is within analytics. But the things that I wasn't taught and learned the hard way is all of those other skills, right? The storytelling and making it an engaging, you know, story with what you're trying to learn and do. And listening skills, sitting in a room and really anticipate, you know, trying to figure out what's going on and how analytics can help solve some of the questions. And it's funny, I still remember the day we were in I was at Best Buy. My mentor, who was my manager and the CMO there, we had a big executive presentation and he asked me to join and present something. And I was ready. I was buttoned up. I anticipated all the questions that were going to come up and I nailed it. And I thought, you know, great job, David. So we left and he said, well, let's go back to my office and talk about the meeting. And I'm thinking, oh, well, this is great. I'm going to get, you know, praise. And he asked me what happened in the meeting. And I told him I nailed this great presentation. And he's like, you weren't listening. Like, you had an opportunity to do some things and all you cared about was getting through your content that you had already decided beforehand what they needed to hear. And I still remember that day, Bill, because in my mind, it was great. And then the more he talked about it and forced me to think about it, it was like, so I learned that the hard way, and I've shared that story quite a few times with folks who I want to prevent them from learning it the hard way. And, you know, that stuck around. And I think we talk about some of the softer skills, but it's real. And for me anyway, it wasn't natural. So, you know, for the next, I don't know, it felt like forever, we'd come out of a meeting and my manager would say, okay, David, what just happened? And, you know, at first I'd be like, well, Bill said this and David said that. And then I was like, well, here's what Bill was trying to do. And I got better at it as I practiced it, but it wasn't something that came natural. So, yeah, I think the technical skills are critical. You have to have that to have credibility. But it's not enough, I think, to really have the impact that we all want to have as, you know, not only analytics leaders, but, you know, leaders within a company.
That's a terrific story. I'm glad you shared that.
No, it was painful, it's, Bill. It's so it wasn't consistent. A terrific story.
It's a terrific story in terms of an example for learning for people who maybe are earlier in their career, because it's a recurring theme when I talk to people on this webcast that senior people in one way or another bring up the same theme you brought up, which is, and it was true for me as well. You come out of school thinking that what mattered was all this technical knowledge that you had. And it's not that that's unimportant, but there's all these other things. And to be honest, I've been coming to believe recently that we almost need to have required courses like stage presence course from the drama department and, you know, and public speaking course, just some courses that address exactly that scenario you're talking about, because anyone who's going to get anywhere beyond a lower level analyst is going to end up in a meeting just like that. And I'll spare you the details today, but I had one or two in my career of the same moments. Bill, what happened in that meeting? And I'm like, what do you mean what happened? It went great. And you know, it ends up that, I had been so focused on delivering my amazing results that I hadn't picked up that there was either some resistance or some difference of opinion. And so it wasn't as successful as I thought. Very, very painful to hear, but I'm thankful for those who did, because I feel like I improved a lot over the years then as well.
Yeah, I agree.
So tying this then, you know, obviously I work with students a lot here at KSU, and they're often intrigued to know what advice I or others would have. I think you just gave them one great piece of advice with that discussion of some of those traits and what you were surprised. But what other advice might you have for students or very early career people in terms of what should they be thinking about today as they're getting ready to maybe interview, they're thinking about their career path, et cetera?
Yeah, I think one thing is to realize that one of the great things about analytics is that you can get there through a lot of different roads, pre-dental to, you know, a bunch of other things. And I've talked to plenty of people who think that, oh, they don't have the right background, they don't have the right degree, they don't have the right training. And I think that's a cop-out, right? I think you have to have certain technical skills, you have to have certain soft skills to be successful. But I think one of the great things that I've seen in my career is that you can get there in a lot of different ways. And I think I certainly have learned from experience that it's not to create a great team is not to take the best statistician and try to clone them, right? It was funny going back to another story. There was someone that I worked with in HR, and I'd asked her to join our analytics team. She was very quantitative and very great strategically. And she joined our analytics team. And, you know, quite a few people took me aside and said, David, like, what is this? Like, that's a different skill set. That's a different function. And I knew that that would make our team better because she was good at some things that we were not as good at. And at first, we were kind of stupid about it. Both her and I tried to make her into something she wasn't. Oh, her HR work was very quantitative. And, you know, and then it occurred to us that that was kind of silly that we brought her on to, you know, have some complementary skills. So why do we try to make her sound like everyone else? And so that was a great lesson. She was one of the stars of the department. We're still friends. And, you know, the fact that she had an HR background and most of us didn't was a good thing, not a bad thing. So I think that's important. And in fact, we just made a job offer to someone who is a middle school and high school teacher. And he gave us a case study as part of the interview. Oh, my goodness. He nailed it. If you can explain math to, you know, a seventh grader, you're going to be just fine, you know, with other folks. So, you know, again, he's not a traditional, he doesn't have a traditional background compared to the rest of us. And that's a good thing, not a bad thing. So if you're sitting there and planning to go to dental school or planning to be a teacher, and you want to change your mind, I think there's opportunity to do that.
Yeah, if I can tie a couple of those threads together, on the one hand, you know, you made the point that having those technical skills isn't enough. On the flip side, you made the point that the skills are what's going to matter. So if you don't have the official degree, you can still succeed and get opportunities in this space if you can demonstrate you have learned those skills via whatever other channel.
I'd say the only other thing I was going to say there is, you know, thinking about not answering business questions with technical jargon, right? I think some of us get excited or nervous, and we might think that a business executive is asking about our methodology or something. Typically, they're asking a business question. And so, you know, heteroscedasticity is usually not the answer. So, you know, think about how to talk to them in a language that matters the most. And I guarantee you that's not stats jargon. So something else to think about. In the moment, it might sound like a good idea, but they trust you to do the stats thing. They really want to know your opinions about what they should do from a business standpoint.
I always tell my students, you use one of my favorite words as an example. I always say, never, ever put the word heteroscedasticity on any slide or verbally into any discussion with somebody who's not a deep analytics person. But anyway, I'll thank you. You've been very generous with your time today. I will say you're definitely the first originally pre-dental person I've spoken to that got into analytics. And, you know, thanks so much for your time today.
Thanks, Bill. I appreciate the time. Thank you.